Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first quarter of 2019 results conference call. Today, Carlos will start with a quick overview of Galp's strategy execution and operational update of the quarter. Filipe will then go through the results. At the end of the presentation, we will be available to take any questions you may have. Thor is here with us as well. I would like to remind you that we may be making several looking forward statements. Actual results may differ due to factors included in the cautionary statements available at the beginning of our presentation, which we advise you to read. Carlos, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro, and good morning to you all. During the Q1, Galp delivered a resilient set of results in a context of lower oil prices, weaker refining margins, and refining operational issues. Our cash flow from operations was healthy in the quarter, and our downstream commercial activities performed well across all products, notably in gas and electricity. Let me briefly go through the performance of our divisions, starting with E&P on slide five. As you may see, the working interest production was flat quarter-on-quarter as planned. The FPSO number 9 has started in February in Lula North, and the FPSO number 8 is still ramping up in the extreme south of Lula. However, and having these two units ramping up, this was offset by planned maintenance in Mangaratiba unit, placed in Iracema South. Again, this is consistent with the plan we presented to you back in February. The unitization of Lula is now in place, and meaning that from April 1st onwards, our stake has been reduced to around 9.2% of the wider Lula reservoir, including the area outside the BM-S-11 concession. Iracema, as you know, is a separate field, and therefore, our stake will remain unchanged at 10%. This is in line with what we assumed in our plan guidance for the 2019 year. Equalization of past costs and also CapEx support over the original 10% interest and profits received thereunder are being finalized amongst the partners. A similar process will follow for the Iara field, with Galp standing in an overall net receiver position. In Iara, works are proceeding according to plan towards the first production in the second half of this year from Berbigão and tieback from Sururu, both fields belonging to the Iara area. In Carcará, we continued the appraisal works in Carcará North, where we also confirmed hydrocarbons presence in the second well drilled in the area in the east side of the Carcará North. Results are still being analyzed, but we are positive on the potential of this area. Moving to Angola and on blocks 14 and 32, they have been contributed steadily to production. The Kaombo South FPSO started production at the beginning of this month of April, and we expect to full ramp up the unit before the year end. In Mozambique, the Coral FLNG execution is progressing according to plan. As for the first phase of the large Rovuma LNG onshore liquefaction project, the consortium is getting ready to take the FID over the next few months. On the exploration side, we have concluded around 3,000 square kilometers of seismic acquisition in our Namibia operating concession in PEL 83. Overall, Galp's Q2 production is expected to be quite stable Q1Q considering the impact from Lula unitization and the ramp-up of the most recent units in Brazil and in Angola. This unitization effect was considered in our plan and is within our guidance for the year that I recall to you is an increase in production between 8% and 12% comparing with 2018. Moving to our downstream activities and now on slide number six. Refining had a challenging quarter with a significant decrease in refining margins pressured by weaker gasoline cracks, the upset in Magazine refinery we had mentioned back in February to you, and industrial action during the quarter. Galp's margins have been at around $4 per barrel during this month of April, with a healthier market environment and higher availability of the units. For now, we are maintaining our guidance of $5 to $6 per barrel for the year. We do not expect major maintenance activities before Q3, where we expect the Sines refinery atmospheric distillation unit to stop for 40 to 50 days. This should not compromise the operational availability of the conversion units. I would like to notice this and underline this. The conversion units will continue to work, and the respective margins are expected to happen. On the marketing front, we continue to benefit from supportive sales to direct clients across all products, such as the diesel, gasoline, jet, and the bunkers that are really outstanding during the year. As for the gas and power business, this was a strong quarter, benefiting from the performance of the natural gas and electricity commercial activities, where we are implementing a set of initiatives to be more efficient, to increase our competitiveness, and the value of our services to the clients. So, looking forward, we expect our network trading activity to continue having volume. And additionally, we are aiming at strengthening our commercial initiatives in Iberia and securing a competitive long-term natural gas and electricity sourcing basket. So, Philippe will now go through the financials. Philippe.
Thank you, Carlos, and good morning. I will start with the P&L on slide 8. The group EBITDA was 450 million euros, excluding the positive effects from IFRS 16. Under IFRS 16, 44 million euros in operating lease costs are excluded from EBITDA. So if we ignore this, the uplift from IFRS, so on a comparable basis, group EBITDA was flat year-on-year as the higher production in E&P was offset by a lower contribution from refining. E&P EBITDA of 341 million euros, again ex IFRS 16, was up year-on-year, and this was mostly driven by rising production. Compared with Q4 last year, E&P EBITDA was flat, driven on the one hand by lower oil prices, which were down almost $6 per barrel. But on the other hand, you will recall Q4 had been hit by over 50 million euros of underlifting effects. On refining and marketing, EBITDA was only 59 million euros, ex IFRS 16. And that's down both quarter-on-quarter and year-on-year, driven by the weak refining contribution Carlos alluded to before. Gas and power had a strong quarter, with EBITDA up 14 million euros year-on-year, reflecting a stronger performance from the natural gas and electricity commercial activity. Below the line, I would highlight the positive swing in financial results, with the reversal of the mark-to-market of financial derivatives we alluded to during our last call, and this is as expected. Also on this financial results line, and considering IFRS 16, we have 35 million euros in operating lease interest and some IFRS 16 driven non-cash exchange rate effects. Net income under RCA was down year on year and marginally up quarter on quarter. Under IFRS, net income was affected by a non-recurring 98 million euros related to the Lula unitization, where we have recognized the effect of past costs and profits. These are net of tax and minority interests. Now on cash flow, on slide 9. Cash flow from operations in Q1 was a healthy 353 million euros, and again, this is ex-IFRS 16. CapEx was only 152 million euros, as normally Q1 is lighter in terms of investment payments. Group free cash flow reached, therefore, 159 million euros. You will please note that our free cash flow includes all operating lease payments, that is, deemed interest and the principal repayments. We are considering IFRS 16 to be neutral at the free cash flow level, reflecting the substance of the operating lease payments. As Brazil became cash positive last year, in Q1 we distributed a dividend of 68 million euros to our partner Sinopec from the Brazil JV. Also, the remaining 176 million euros of the loan to Sinopec was fully reimbursed by Sinopec against a capital reduction in the JV. On the balance sheet on slide 10, assets increased by about 1.2 billion euros, driven by the inclusion of the right of use of assets which are under operating lease contracts. An equivalent amount is recognized as a liability. The other assets liabilities line includes, as of March 31st, an amount payable of 133 million euros related to the equalization estimate under the Lula unitization process. Now, this amount does not yet include the estimate of payments to be received by GALP to compensate for the share of Lula investments borne by 2PBV and for the unitization of the Yara fields. As we stated before, GALP expects to be in a net receiver position of about 100 million euros. Net debt, ex the lease liabilities, was down to 1.6 billion euros. Net debt to EBITDA was 0.7 times, with EBITDA here also stripped out of the IFRS 16 uplift. Including the lease liabilities as debt, our EBITDA also inflated according to IFRS 16, the ratio would be 1.3 times. I will stop here, and we're happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Callers may ask two questions. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, please press star and one if you wish to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of Oswald Clint from Bernstein. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Thank you very much, Carlos. Good morning. First question, just on your confidence, I guess, around the refining margin for 2019 at $5 to $6 per barrel. Obviously, at 2.3 in the quarter, we're really, and you mentioned four for so far, but you really need to step that up to, I guess, $5 and $6 per barrel to get to that sort of margin environment. So, could you perhaps just talk around? What your expectations are here on is it product pricing? Is it the light heavy differentials expanding again, or is it something operational through the rest of the year that gives you the confidence you can still hit that sort of refinery margin level, please? That's the first question. And I guess the second question, I was just curious around some recent news flow from Petrobras around a bit of a pilot FPSO on Jupiter by early 2023. It seems a bit more specific than some of the indications from Galp. So I just want to clarify, is that a project that's moving forward a little bit quicker than we might have expected before? Thank you.
Well, good morning, Oswald, and thank you for your two questions. In refining margins, what we will expect is clearly that the spreads between heavy and light, or if you prefer, with the sour and sweet crudes, will increase all across the year once the IMO approaches, which means that the cracks of diesel, so the demanding of marine diesel and the middle distillates also will increase, and therefore it tend to press up the cracks and therefore the refining margins. And you also should consider that the dollar per barrel project that we are implementing, that is midway, should be completed by the second half of this year. So we tend to conclude the year in a better position. So in respect to Jupiter, I will ask the Tor to take the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Oswald. When it comes to Jupiter, you will know that we have a very comprehensive R&D program going on for Jupiter with respect to maturing the development of this very interesting but challenging field. The first step for us now is really now done to make sure that the testing of the HISEP pilot on Libra is being conducted during the second half of 19. And thereafter, we plan internally in the JV to see whether we can pass a spell one during the course of 19 as well. That is how far we have firm plans, and over and above that, it is too early and too premature for us to make any conclusions. We are very determined to go to the next. But yes, it is a very interesting field if you can find an economic way to develop it.
Okay, super, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Biraj Borkhataria from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking my questions. Two, please. The first one is on the production guidance. Carlos, could you talk through what would it take for you to be at the top or the bottom end of your production growth guidance for 2019 and some of the key moving parts there? And then the second question on the downstream, could you just update us on the industrial action that impacted Q1 and how that impacts Q2 at all? Thank you.
So good morning, Biraj. So concerning the production, as we have mentioned to you back in February, we have considered in our guidance that the unitization process was already considered, and also all the planned maintenance for the year of 2019. So we have anticipated some maintenance during this first Q. We have already from 1st April onwards the unitization process effective, and therefore the range that we have provided to you in the beginning of the year was precisely considering the indefinition of all those variables. So we are confident that the guidance that we have presented to you, it is still the reality. In relation to industrial action, we had during this quarter some initiatives from the unions that were related with some benefits they or pre-retirement benefits they are trying to recover from the past. I think we are having good discussions with the unions, and we hope that the situation might be stabilized in the next coming weeks. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Mehdi Ennebati, Societe Generale. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning, and thanks for taking my questions. So two questions, please. The first one regarding Petrogal Brazil dividend payment to the shareholders. So we can see, as you highlighted, that Sinopec received 68 million euros. Of course, you received the remaining part. But I would like to know if this or what is, let's say, the frequency of that dividend payment. Is it a quarterly dividend? Is it a half-yearly dividend? Is it a yearly dividend? And could you also tell us if there is a clear policy regarding that dividend payment? Is it correlated to the free cash flow generation of Petrogal Brazil? Is it correlated to the earnings? So just for us, you know, to try to forecast it. Second question regarding the refining. So the utilization rate has been relatively low compared to Q1 last year. So I wanted to know if that was in order to preserve the refining margins, or if there was, you know, some other reasons, and if the remaining margin, the refining margins, sorry, remain, let's say, close to the current level, should we expect that the utilization rate would remain in line with the first quarter 2019, excluding maintenance impact, of course. Thank you.
Hi, Mary. Good morning. So concerning the dividends paid in Petrogal Brazil, and as Philippe has mentioned, this is a one-off event. Of course, we are seeing that Petrogal Brazil is generating free cash flow positive. And, of course, this free cash flow has to be considered for future needs or future requirements related with new projects and new investments in Brazil. Otherwise, the cash generated will turn back to the shareholders. You know that we have 70% in the JV and Sinopec has 30%. You should not make any direct relation with the dividends paid in Q1 and the free cash flow, and as well the dividends policy. So in the plan that we have presented to you back in February, we have already considered that dividends could stand between 100 and 150 million euros in a yearly basis. So you cannot extrapolate, but you can see over time that this will originate dividends to be paid to the shareholders, including to Sinopec. So concerning to the utilization rate in refining, so there are two contributions here. The margins, refining margins, were historically low, and therefore that puts some pressure in terms of the refinery utilization also. What you can see is that going forward, our conversion capacity should stand at the maximum as possible, because that's where we can get more value from our throughputs. And that's what we will expect. And as I mentioned before to Oswald, it is expected that as the year goes by and the IMO approaches, we may see that the differentials between sweet and sours, and at the same time the cracks in the diesel and also in the very low sulfur fuel oils will increase. So that together and related also with the dollar per barrel, we do see that we might have a second half of the year that could be really positive for refining. the utilization rate always will take in consideration the optimization based on the economics that we provide to our refining system. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Flora Trindade, Caixa Bank BPI. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, hello. Very short questions. Just wondering regarding the refining outlook, can you just update us on the OPEX you expect for the full year? And also regarding Yara, you mentioned unitization expected. Do you expect unitization agreement still during this year? Thank you.
Good morning, Flora. Thank you for your two questions. So concerning the refining OPEX, so the levelized refining OPEX should stand close by to $2, $2.1 per barrel. And so if you take out the maintenance effects that we are taking for the interventions in the units, and the only intervention that we are planning for this year with relevance is, as I mentioned before, is in the atmospheric credit unit in Sines, and it is to implement one of the relevant initiatives related with the dollar per barrel. So for your consideration, should be between $2 and $2.1 per barrel. Concerning Yara, what I have to say is that all the agreements that will be required between the parties are already concluded, and they have been delivered to ANP, so to the regulator, and therefore we are now expecting that ANP will properly and timely answer to that. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question, and the question comes from Thomas Adolf, Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning. Just one quick question, please. You have three key projects in 2019, and two of which have started up. FPSO number 9, in line with the revised guidance. Kaombo in early April, slightly ahead, and then the remaining project is Berbigao Sururu. So I just wanted to better understand what you assume for the ramp-up pace on FPSO 9 and where we are exactly on Berbigao Sururu and how many wells have been pre-drilled there. Thank you.
So, Thomas, good morning. I will split the answer between myself and Tor. So, in terms of ramp-up, what we have considered in our plans is a 15 months ramp-up period of time. You may know that the previous experience that we have in more recent units, we stand between 11 and 12 months. But the plans that we have presented to you have considered 15 months. So that is one of the flexibilities that we might have. I'm speaking about Brazilian units, and that refers to the two that are ramping up. In relation to Kaombo, and as I mentioned to you, we expect to have the ramp-up completed and the plateau production by before the end of this year, so which means between 6 and 7 months. Concerning Berbigão, I will pass to Tor just to pointing out that we have a different perspective in terms of which is the most likely scenario. We are assuming that Berbigão could be on stream in the fourth quarter of this year, but I will let to Tor to elaborate on this subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Just a few facts on Kaombo. We have actually drilled 9 out of the 16 wells that we are planning to drill with respect to producers on Kaombo Sur. We will, however, ramp up Kaombo Sur slightly slower than on Kaombo North in order to make sure that we are managing the reservoir in a good way. So by the end of the year, it should reach plateau, but a little slower than what was done in Tombo North. When it comes to Bedrigo and Tururu, there is six wells that is built already in Bedrigo and Tururu, two of which is completed, so are ready to be connected whenever the lake is on time. We are following this project very, very closely. We latest had a group at the yard 1.5 weeks ago. The execution of this project is going to be very crucial. All the necessary equipment is at the yard. However, it's a project that requires the utmost attention and focus in order to be able to be delivered within the time frame. But for now, we maintain before the end of the year as for first order. Thank you.
So quickly, if I may, just a follow-up. Now, assuming Bedrigão Sururu slips into 2020, what does that mean to your 2019 production growth guidance of 8 to 12%?
In our production forecast for 2019, we have not factored in a huge contribution from Bedrigão Sururu anyway, so this will not have any major impact on Bedrigão, on our 2019 production forecast. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Jason Kenney from Santander. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi there. I'm going to have another go at the production number, if I can, for 2019. Because I think you're guiding relatively flat Q on Q for second quarter. So what kind of exit rate do you think we could see in 2019 from all of your particular projects? The second question is on the unitization with Yara, and the I think you mentioned 100 million net compensation this year. Can you split that 100 million versus between the Lula effects and the Yara compensation? And maybe just a third question, if I can, where do you see tax rates moving to in the second quarter with refining bouncing back? And is there a normalization back towards 50%? Thanks.
Hi, Jason. Good morning. Again, the guidance that we have provided to you, I have to reinforce, because there's a lot of questions on that, it continues to be 8 to 12%. The exit production is worthless, because what is important is the pace of growing during the year. That is the most relevant one. We should stand above 120,000 barrels a day by the as an exit rate, but it is important is the pace that we reach there. In terms of unitization, and just recovering one of the questions that Thomas has also addressed. So the unitization in Yara fields are now waiting for ANP decision that we expect to have it during 2019. What has been mentioned, and Philippe has alluded to that, is that Galt is a net payer receiver, in a net receiver position concerning both Lula and Yara. And it is around 100 million euros. So you can easily see that if Lula is negatively impacting around 100, so the remaining part comes from Yara. Thank you.
Okay, and on the tax?
Tax, yes. Philippe will address the tax part. Thank you.
Good morning, Jason. Yes, indeed, in Q1, we have a higher optical tax rate on the P&L. This is a mixed effect. So we have negative results in downstream. We have results in upstream. So the weight of upstream is higher, as you know. We should expect normalization in Q2 as downstream comes back. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Rob Pullin from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you, gentlemen. So if we can go back to refining, is the $4 margin you referenced for April meant to be indicative for 2Q, especially given the improvement in U.S. gasoline market? And secondly, could you update or remind us on how the remainder of 2019 looks, on how much of the refining is hedged and at what level? Thank you.
Hi, Rob. Good morning. Your first question, the answer is yes. The $4 per barrel is indicative. Anyway, what we are seeing is that the gasoline cracks, they have recovered. Just to give you an idea, we came out from Eurobob gasoline from $57 per ton to more than $145 per ton. And if you go to the RBOB gasoline, so which is the reference for the United States, it came from 95 to 190. So effectively, it's a huge difference between quarters. So I think with the gasoline season coming and with recover on the gasoline cracks, we might see the refining margins going up. But in any case, it's our reading about the market. Concerning the hedging strategy, and as mentioned before, for 2019, we have hedged around 20% of our throughput at around $4 per barrel. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Matt Lofting from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Morning. Thanks for taking the questions. Two, if I could, please. Firstly, with preparations for a 4Q transfer of rights auction appearing to move forward in Brazil, could you share any latest thoughts on the opportunity set there and some of the key drivers that will influence how Galp looks to allocate capital towards it? And then second, coming back to the questions on refining margins, could you give a sense of how tightened year-to-date light heavy spreads are affecting Galp's ability to extract a margin premium? And if we relate that back to the full-year plan you presented in February, how much better you'd assumed the second half of the year would be versus the first half? I'm still just trying to understand the confidence interval around hitting the $5 to $6 for the full year. Thank you.
Hi, Matt. Good morning. So in Brazil, and the excess of transfer of rights that has been recently announced, and it's quite still some unclear how the auction will happen. So key points for Galp. We are attentive. Of course, Brazil is a strategic geography and geology for Galp. We are there for more than 20 years. We know quite well the geology. I think we have good partners there, and therefore we will be attentive on that. That said, it's still unclear for us which will be the terms and conditions for the excess of transfer of rights. And therefore, we need more information to have a more informed position. But of course, it's something that we were waiting for some time ago, and we are prepared to move if we do think there is a right value on that. Concerning the refining margins, you know, everything that we can say, it's clearly speculative because it's based on the reading of the market. But what we are observing today is that gasoline cracks are increasing. We are also see that there are some fears in the market due to the sensations that United States have now against some countries that are putting more pressure on the heavy grades. And therefore, there are
concerns about the capacity of who supply the market in terms of fuel oil. And that is sustaining the fuel oil spreads, and the IMO is coming. So the maximum conversion capacity will also be required. So we are in a compound of different contributions that are each one individually seems easy to explain and to see the impacts that might happen to the refining margins, but globally we cannot say that all will be aligned favorably. We do think that the $5 to $6 barrel, it's a probable case, and that's the reason why we are reaffirming our guidance for the year long. You can see also at the same time that the yields related with the crude slate that are in the market are reducing the fuel oil, and that is putting also pressure or complying with IMO in the middle distillate. So effectively we have here a compound that is unique. It will be repeatable possibly in the coming years, but could be triggering what someone could call, and let me put that under brackets, and a perfect storm related with this business. Thank you.
Clear. Thanks, Carlos.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Alwyn Thomas, Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning, team. I just wanted to ask initially on your exploration and drilling plans for this year, including the rest of Qarqara, whether you were able to give a little bit more detail on that. Separately, on the unitization of Lula, are you still pursuing separate tax treatment for the Iracema and Lula fields? And a third one, if I may, just related to refining investment outlook. Could you give specific timing on the atmospheric upgrading plans for this year and potentially what you're thinking on the medium term in terms of converting away from gasoline yield? Thanks.
Hi, Helen. Good morning. I will take the second and the third questions, and Tor will elaborate in exploration initiatives for the year. So the answer to the tax question related with Lula and Iracema, the answer is yes. So they are independent and separate reservoirs. And you know that from the tax purpose, we are considering and we are paying taxes based in a single one, but we still have this dispute with ANP, as you know. So we are preventing any future different considerations, but from the geological point of view, they are independent, and as the same happens with the other fields. They are independent fields. We have Sururu, Berbigão, and Atapu as independent fields, and therefore with different tax framework. In what relates to refining investments, so the ones that we have undergoing are most related with regular maintenance initiatives and the dollar per barrel initiative. For the medium term, and as I've previously mentioned to you, we are looking at what we can call our future refining system, and taking in consideration how we can get more valuable solutions for our throughput, for our outcomes, considering the possibility to increase our exposure to the supplying, so to the feedstocks for aromatic purposes, and also to getting more lighter hydrocarbon yields from our system. So I think in the short term, is the maintenance and the dollar per barrel. And I've mentioned to you before that the Singe distillation crude unit will have a maintenance intervention precisely to implement one of the projects that is energy efficient related with the dollar per barrel. But the conversion units will stay at full availability. So, Tor, could you please elaborate on the exploration? Thank you.
So, Alvin, on the exploration, and particularly with respect to Carcará and Carcará Northeast, the operation has gone really well from a technical point of view. The data acquisition has also been good. We have informed the market that there is some oil discovery. That is now being evaluated as we are continuing acquiring data. We are now at around a little bit more than 6,500 meters depth. We are considering whether this we should call this DD or whether we should go further. Next step for us will then be to go into a DSC. It's very important for us here to conduct a proper DSC to understand better the physical properties for the reservoir. But so far, so good. And then we need to go through an evaluation phase before we can say anything more. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, team.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Christopher Copland from Bank of America. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think these are mainly questions to clarify a few of the things you said. Carlos, earlier you talked about a business plan reflecting 100 and 150 million of dividend payments. Maybe I didn't quite understand. Could you put that, please, into context against the 68 million dividend payment that you're showing in Q1 and that you're suggesting is a one-off? Secondly, as far as the operating lease addition onto your balance sheet is concerned, I wonder which net debt EBITDA figure you've given us, 0.7 or 1.3, matters to you more these days. I appreciate you don't have a credit rating that's published, but maybe any additional color you could give us here would be helpful. And lastly, just wanted to test again whether you can be a bit more specific in terms of your outlook on the gas and power business, particularly what you call the network trading activity that seems to have gone really well in the first quarter. Is that something we should expect at this rate going forward? Thank you.
Hi, Chris. Good morning. So I will take the first and the third question. Philippe will go through the second one. So in terms of the dividends paid by Petrogal Brazil to their shareholders and therefore to Sinopec. So you should see that all the free cash flow, unless it will be required for further investments, will be paid to the shareholders as dividends going forward. What I've mentioned to you is that during 2019, and based on the assumptions that we have taken for macro environment, we may consider that the dividend to be paid to Sinopec could stand between 100 and 150 million euros. And that will increase over time as the production will go up and depending, of course, on the free cash flow that will be released. And again, future in the reinvestment opportunities. Since if we will find out valuable investment opportunities, this free cash flow, it will be prioritized for reinvesting. Otherwise, it will go back to the shareholders, including, of course, GALP. In the gas and power, there are a set of initiatives that have been implemented, and now we are seeing them flourish. The reorganization of the gas and power business is a reality. So today we have a much healthier and well-managed and controlled operation, which means that we are able to take more advantage from our Iberian position. But looking at the trading activities and therefore the one that is related with the European gas hubs, as we used to say, the trading, the network trading business, it's progressing healthier as the time goes by, and with few or no working capital requirement, because this is based on daily transactions, and I think the team is now today in a much better position to continue to promote and develop this business. Looking to the full year and considering the guidance that we have provided to you of having gas and power with an EBITDA between 100 and 150 million euros, I tend to consider that we'll stay in the right side of this interval range for the full year. So, Philip, can you go in the second question, please?
Hi, Chris. At least for this year, we will continue to publish numbers before and after IFRS 16. As far as our covenants with the members, they will specifically exclude the impact of IFRS 16 in our covenants. So from a lender's perspective, this is not the problem. Now, mind you that help is including in its free cash flow statement the repayment of deemed capital that we pay out every month when we pay the operating leases. So that's already net of the free cash flow. So we think it is also coherent that when we look at net debt to EBITDA, that the debt within the net debt to EBITDA ratio is also before the lease obligations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of John Rigby, UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Yeah. First question I wanted to ask was on the VMS 8, the Carcarrone North second discovery. Can you just, to the extent you can, maybe give a bit more color on what this means or what it may mean in terms of how you think about the development should the results of the test that you're about to take forward be successful or towards the better end of prognosis? I mean, how important are these about sort of delineating and defining what the future development is going to look like? And to that point, actually, related to a couple of other questions that have come up, it's notable you've not actually written off or amortized any kind of exploration expense for about five or six quarters now. So I noticed with the seismic acquisition, et cetera, there's a bit more exploration going on. Should we be expecting some sort of impact on the income statement of exploration activity? So that was one question, testing the limits. The second question was around gas, and I just wanted to ask, you alluded to the fact that Mozambique will likely be FID this year. You've obviously made some sort of early commitment to taking volumes. I just wondered whether you thought that the existing gas and power business that you have rooted in Iberia has the critical mass to sort of support a LNG marketing business implied by the type of commitment that you likely will make around offtake around Mozambique. Thank you.
Hi, John. Good morning. I will take the second question and the combination of the two first. So I will elaborate on that. So from the gas and power and specifically the LNG or the natural gas supply basket.
Yeah.
So you should bear in mind that we are working towards the full reorganization of our gas supplying basket. We have been done in that effort in the last 1-2 years. One of the initiatives that we have already implemented was precisely to expose ourselves to the United States
supply. So we are trying to find out diversification of sources, diversification of counterparties, diversification in terms of maturities, diversification of indexes, and therefore Mozambique will play an important role in this reorganization. So you know that some of the existing contracts will end from 2020 onwards, namely with Algeria and with Nigeria. We are already working with these two counterparts in order to review the contract and to review the possibilities of continuing to have a relationship in the future. But precisely by having a relevant Iberian position allow us to have long-term contracts. And by having long-term contracts, we can aspire to have a supply chain, a supply basket that could allow us to be a player in the global market precisely by using equity gas, which is one of the innovations that we are bringing to our organization. So we are, I think, approaching consistently with both, on one side, reorganization of our supply gas basket, and the other, keeping and strengthening our position in Iberia that allow us to continue to expand our activity. So could you please elaborate on that one?
Yes, I would like to do that to John. So when it comes to BMSA, let me phrase it like this, that we are encouraged by the results, but it is too early to make any conclusions on what the Calcutta North results really are. And they require much deeper analysis, including a DSD. But please remember that for the first phase, we are already very well advanced when it comes to sort of deciding a groundbreaking and a novelty for Brazil, namely that we would go for a 2,000 to 20,000 barrels per day FPSO. We have said that we believe there is a break even below $40 per barrel, and that's indicating some of the profitability and the quality of that asset. And now it is for us to then continue to evaluate what the North will give us. What seems to be already the case is that with the two wells that we now have, namely Cascada Northwest and now Cascada Northeast, we have sufficient, we believe we have sufficient information to also take the decision with respect to how to develop also the second phase. The focus of Gulf now, together with the partners, is to maximize speed to first oil, number one, and number two is to shorten the distance between the first and the second FPSO as much as possible in order to maximize the value for our shareholders. That's where we have our focus. Thank you. And with respect to the expression write-offs, yes, we have not seen this because we have changed our practice, and that goes now directly to the bottom line of it, where we are writing off on a monthly basis or quarterly basis.
Right. Okay, thank you. That's great.
Thank you. And your last question comes from the line of Michael Alford from Citi. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello all. Thanks for taking my questions. I've just got a couple if I could. Just coming back to the medium-term plans for the refining system, when would you look to be able to launch a more major investment into that system, and how big could you potentially see that range of investment being? And then just secondly, on the E&P business, I was just wondering whether you could elaborate a little bit more on what the final hurdles are to take FID on the Rovuma LNG project in Mozambique. Thank you.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you. So in terms of the refining system, we are still analyzing, so it's a value question for us. Always. We are looking attentively for both increasing conversion
and as well looking at possible increasing in terms of feedstocks for aromatics purposes. So I think we will have to elaborate more on this in the next coming months and get back to you in our capital markets day that should be happen by October. Concerning the Rovuma onshore project, we are working towards the FID during this year, so the sooner the better. There are a complexity of different initiatives being taken by all the parties, and once we will be capable to conclude them, including the approvals from the government of Mozambique, we will be in that position. But we are, for the moment, we are considering that during this year we might be in a position to take the FID. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Carlos.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attention. We hope you have found this update useful. And I remind you that you have the IR team always available for additional clarifications. Have a great day. Goodbye.